Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi Maseches Bava Kama Daf Nunhei. We are holding on Nun Dalad Amud Beis, two lines off the bottom. So in yesterday's Daf, we compared the Psukim by the Aseres HaDibrois the first time around and the second Aseres HaDibrois in Sefer Dvarim with respect to the way the Psukim present the Halachos of Shabbos. So on account of that discussion, we're going to continue and make another comparison between the two sets of Aseres HaDibrois, the first and the second. So that's the Gemara, two lines from the bottom. Shal Rabbi Chanina ben Ogel, that was his name, he asked, Es Rabbi Chia bar Abba, have a question. Bipnei ma, why is it so that B'dibrois HaRishonos, you take a look at the first set of Aseres HaDibrois in Parshas Yisroel, when the Pasuk presents the mitzvah of Kibud Av Va'em, you know, it omits the word Leman Yitav Loch, that Hashem will endow you with good, the mitzvah will generate toiv, goodness. There's no mention of that. It says you'll have a long life, but doesn't have toiv mentioned. Lo nemar behem toiv. But in the Dibros, Ubedibros HaAchroinis, later on in Dvarim, Perek Hei, Pasuk Tezayin, there in discussing Kabe Desavicha Vesimecha, it continues and says, Leman Yarichon Yamecha, it's going to prolong your life, and it adds, Uleman Yitav Loch, it's going to bring you goodness. So Ubedibros HaAchroinis, nemar behem toiv, we have the expression of toiv. Why this difference? Amalai responded, a good question, but you know, you're asking the wrong person. Ad sha'ata she'aleini lama nehebar behem toiv. But you know, before you start asking me why it says toiv here and not there, you know, I'm not even sure that it, you know, she'aleini, you should really ask me im nehebar behem toiv, if in fact it says toiv there or not, im lav or not. She'ini yodei, I'm not even sure in nehebar behem toiv im lav. I'm not really sure whether it says the word toiv in the first set of Aseres HaDibrois or not. So it's interesting that the Tosafos in Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, when Aleph brings a raya from here, that, you know, at times the Amoraim, as great as they were, but they were more focused on the Halacha, they weren't necessarily so bucky 100% in the Psukim. On the other hand, there's another pshat from the Riaf, that's a Pirush on the Ein Yaakov. He says that what Rabbi Chiya really meant to say was, I'm not sure whether, you know, the words that are mentioned by Dibros Rishonos in Parshas Yisroel, it reflects exactly what was said by the Dibros Rishonos, and what is found in Parshas Veschanan is perfectly reflective of the Dibros Achroinos. Because, you know, it could be that the things that are said in Parshas Veschanan were really said, you know, the first time around as well, but, you know, later on it's expounded and explained in more detail. So that's what he meant to say. You know, I'm not even sure if what you're saying is correct. So in any case, that was his sort of initial response. I can't really help you, but I'll give you some advice. Klach, go ahead and travel to Eitzel Rabbi Tanchum Bar Chaniloi. Why? Because he was an expert. Shoyed Ragil, he was a Talmud, he was a regular, you know, Talmud, a guest, Eitzel Rabbi Shua ben Levi. So you learn by Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Shoye Baki Bagada, who was a Baki, an expert in Agada, in drashos and these types of things. So go to him, I bet you he has a, you know, a pshat for you. Ozel Gabe. So he went to Rabbi Tanchum Bar Chaniloi, hoping that he heard something from his Rebbe, Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Amar Alei, so he said, look, you know, actually, Mimenu lo shamati, I never heard a pshat from Rabbi Shua ben Levi, but I heard from somebody else. Listen to this. Elokach Amar li Shmuel bar Nochum. He told me, and he was actually Achi Imoi, the brother of the mother of whom? Of Shel Rabbi Achim Chanina. And some say, Amilo, some say he was Avi Imoi, the father of the mother, basically the grandfather, Shel Rabbi Achim Chanina. And the answer given was like this. You're asking why in the first Aseres HaDibrois there's no Toiv? Because ultimately, you know, Hashem knew that those Dibrois are not going to last. They're going to be broken. The Luchas are going to break. It's not going to really be something lasting. That's why there's no mention of Toiv. Why is that a reason? Who cares? We don't want to get into a situation where that the goodness will sort of cease, will desist, will stop from Klal Yisrael because if it's mentioned and then it's sort of broken and destroyed, that's going to be an end to the Toivah Chas V'Shalom. So it wasn't mentioned. It specifically was not mentioned there, only in the Dibur Sachroines, which are, you know, everlasting and without interruption. Amar Rabbi Shua, Haroya Tes B'Chaloymai. So on the topic of Tes and Toiv and goodness, if a person sees the letter Tes in a dream, Simon Yafaloy, it's a good sign. My time away. Ilay Moshem Lichtev Toiv, because Tes is, you know, representative of the word Toiv. Well, Eima, maybe Tes represents something bad. V'tatesiv matate hashamid. This is the prophecy envisioning Bavel going through destruction, or to be swept away with a sweeper, with a broom. So yeah, Tes can sometimes mean bad stuff. So the Gemara had a Tes Kamrin, and he only saw one Tes in his dream. So it's not referring to that word v'tatesia, which has many Tes's. Rather, it's the Toiv. Maybe it's going on to Pasuk and Eicha, describing the Tumah of Klal Yisrael. Well, Tes Beis Kamrina. We're speaking that he dreams Tes and Beis, which inevitably means Toiv. Maybe Tes Beis can mean that the, you know, the gateways of Yerushalayim sunk into the ground. So again, it's something negative. Elo says the Gemara Hoyle Pasuk Beyakosav LaToivah Tchila. The reason why Tes alludes to something positive is because the first Tes in the Torah is something good. Why? Shemi Bereshus Adi Vayara Lekim Esar Leksiv Tes. Because if you look at the Psukim from Bereshus Bar Lekim all the way till Pasuk Dal, there's no mention of the word of the letter Tes until you get to Vayara Lekim Esar Ki Toiv. So the first Tes is Latoiva. So when you dream a Tes, it's a good thing. If a person dreams the word hespeid, he sees that written down, that's a sign that he was destined for something negative, like a eulogy of an account of a tragedy, and Hashem sort of redeemed him. They had rachmanis and they saved him, they redeemed him. In fact, some of Farshim learned that hespeid, you know, the hey and the ches are sort of interchangeable, so it was chas, alluding to compassion, to rachmanis, that yeah, it's the Marsha. Sorry, Teras Chaim. So yeah, he says that the reason why they didn't show him the actual, you know, hesped experience, only the written, in its written form, because the hey and the ches are meant to be interchanged, and it was nisbatel the gzera because of the chas, because of the rachmanas v'ani b'libuksov. And again, this is only in writing, as we explained. So Mishnah tells us that, you know, all these halachas, including halachas of kil'ayim, apply to chayos, to behemos, to oifos, v'chein chayo v'oif kayotze behen. They all are included in these halachas. Amrish lakas, kan, shana Rebbe. So in this Mishnah, Rebbe HaKadosh, Rebbe Danossi, compiled the Mishnah, is teaching us a wonderful halacha, that the halacha of kil'ayim, crossbreeding, applies even to birds. So you have different types of birds, different types of oifos. You may not, you know, match them up. Tarnagol tavas upisyoni. You have three types of birds. Tarnagol, which is, you know, a hen, a chicken. Vitavas is a you know, the bird that has those that long tail with all those colors. A peacock, right? Tavas ufisyoni, that's some sort of slav, which they had in the Midbar, some sort of fatty bird. So these are three different types. Tarnagel and a tavas and ufisyoni, kilayim zebedeh, you may not crossbreed them because, as we just said, kilayim applies even to birds. Well, pshuta, obviously, I mean, they're three different types, three different species. Amrav chaviva, the chiddush is like this, mishum derab abadi adadi. Since you find that they, you know, they sort of are raised with each other, they grow up with each other, they're sort of hanging around each other. Perhaps I would say, it's really, you know, three variations of the same species. Kamashmon, the point of the halacha in the name of Rish Lakish is no. You should know the three distinct types of species in which case Kalayim applies. Amar Shmuel, another example is Avaz, your local duck, the Avaz Abar, a wild duck, Kalayim Zabazel, consider Kalayim with each other. Maskalar Abar, no, Chanan, why are you saying that? My time, who says, who determines that there are different types of species? Elay Mishaw is saying, the high Orich Kue. Kue is the beak. This one has a long beak. V'hai Zutor Kue, he has a short beak. That, you know, sort of makes them different species. Elam Yat, if that's the case, Gamlo Parso, Gamlo Taya, you have a Persian camel and a, you know, a camel used by the Arabs. The high Olam Kue, V'hai Cotton Kue, one has a thicker neck. V'hai Cotton Kue, the other one has a thinner, more narrow neck. Okay, now Midav Kalayim Zabazel, you're going to suggest that they're Kalayim with each other, which is unreasonable. They're, you know, they're both camels. Elam Rabbi, Sabai answers like this. The reason why the regular Avos and Avos Abar are considered two separate species is because their body build are so distinctly different. Ze Beitzav Mechutz, in one of them, the male egg testicles are on the outside of the body. Ze Beitzav Mefnim, the other one has it inside. So they're totally different, and therefore they're considered separate species. Rav Papa, another difference we find, one of them, the Avaz Habar, the wild one, has only one, you know, egg at a time. So it only has, you know, one, it can only load one egg inside, you know, inside of itself at a time. Whereas the local, regular Avaz, regular duck, loads up many at a time, so it sort of produces many at a time in its shichla, in its production facility, and therefore it's totally different species. So basically, we determine that these different types of birds are definitely different types of species, whether it's the tarnagel with the tavas with the pisuni, whether it's the avas and the avas abar. We gave two reasons, either because in the contrast to the avas habar, with the beim seen outside, and it only produces one egg at a shot, the Avaz Hayishuv, the local Avaz, has it the other way around, which sets them apart. Listen to this. A person crossbreeds two sort of, you know, sea creatures, two fish, like it. It generates Malkus, because he did the Aver of Kilayim, my time away. Who says that, you know, this halacha applies to birds? Because we have a Xeroshava by the sea creatures, the Pasuk Bereishis Aleph Chaf Aleph mentions the word Liminehem, and we find the same by other types of creatures, birds, it says Limineu. So just like birds cannot be crossbred, likewise fish as well. Boi Rachva. So now he has a Shaila regarding Kalayim. Just like you can't crossbreed, you're not allowed to work them together. You can't take two species, two types of animals, and work with them at once, right? Have them pull a plow, etc. What if you combine a land creature with a sea creature? Hamanik bi'iza v'shibuta mau. What if a person, you know, pulls a wagon using a goat, iza, and a shibuta, some sort of fish, which can do some work? Mau. What's the halacha here? Shall we say, even the Iza Lenachas Biyam? Shall we say there's no combo? There's no combine. It's not really a pair. They're not really pairing up. Because he's on land, he's on sea, at sea. Even the Iza Lenachas Biyam. A goat, a land goat, can't live at sea. Vishibuta Solokli Abashan. Likewise, a fish has no life up on land. So it's not really a combined effort. They don't really sort of connect with each other. Lav klumavit, so he hasn't done anything wrong. Idilma or hashta miyas kamanik. But ultimately, he is leading he's pulling his wagon with these two forces, working in tandem. So perhaps it's called kilayim. Mask of the Ravina. Ravina has a kash on this. Elay miyat, if you're going to take it that far, so are you going to suggest that if a person does as follows? He takes chiber chitos or biyaday. He combines a kernel of wheat, a kernel of barley, puts it together in his hands. So this is really Kalayim, but problem is he's standing right on the border, right on the boundary between Eretz Yisrael, where Kalayim is Asur, and Chutz Laretz, where Kalayim is Mutter. Plants one seed inside Eretz Yisrael, and the other one, the barley outside. Are you going to suggest that he's Chayiv? Since he planted them together, he's Chayiv. Of course not, because they're two separate lands. There's no combination between the two. So likewise with the goat and the fish, Amri said the response given was as follows. You can't compare the two examples. How do you compare? Hasan. There are two different lands. Eretz Mokim Chiyuva. Eretz Yisrael is a place where you cannot plant kelaim in Atara. Chutz La'aretz Loy Mokim Chiyuva. But Chutz La'aretz, there's no Isra kelaim. So you haven't done anything wrong, even though they're very close to each other, because we know that Chayvas Karka, all mitzvahs that are land related are specific to Eretz Yisrael. So the one right across the boundary doesn't connect. There's no Isra. But here, Hacha, when he is pulling his ship with two types of fish, right? Right? Either way, he's doing an Isra, because two different types of fish cannot lead your ship. Two types of land, creatures cannot lead your wagon. So basically, kelaim in this fashion is asr on land, and kelaim in this fashion is asr at sea. So what difference does it make if you're dealing with two fish and or two different types of goats, or you took a goat and a fish? Either way, you've committed kelaim. You've combined two different types of creatures who each on its own relates to kelaim, and therefore combining these two is certainly a violation of isr kelaim. Hadron Allah, shoshanog chasapar. Okay, begin a brand new perek shishi, perek hakoines, says the Mishnah. Hakoines tsoin ledir. Here we're speaking about sort of lighter animals. Until now we spoke about a shoyer, an ox, heavy duty animals. Here we speak about tsoin, typically used to describe sheep, goats. So instead of speaking about animals that are attacking with their, goring with their horns, we're going to speak about these lighter animals, the sheep and the goats, who destroy and damage by way of shein v'regel, eating, consuming, or stepping and trampling on things. So this fellow took his tzoin, his herd of tzoin, into his deer, into his enclosed, pen, v'na'al b'fanei karoi, and locked the door properly. The Gemara soon will tell us it's referring to the basic, minimal standard shmira, which is called shmira p'chusa, which is typically adequate to contain the animal. So he locks the door properly, v'nolo fanel karoi, a door which can withstand your typical gust of wind. Okay, so he's hoping for the best. V'yotzav izika, turns out that the animal barged out and caused damage. Potter. He's totally potter, because he did his part, Rashi says. D'hanotra, he guarded his animal. Umay havali l'meva, what do you expect him to do? He's not a miracle man. He locked the door and assumed everything is safe. But lo yinal b'fanel karoi, suppose he did not close up properly. V'yotzev izika, the animal went out and caused his damage. Chayav, he's liable for that, he has to pay. Nifritza b'layla. Let's say he locked up properly and the animal barged out all the night. Right? So again, he's not responsible. Taisa says, even if he got word, his alarm started ringing, he heard his animal, barged out, we don't obligate him to go run him all the night, to go chase, find his animal in the darkness. So therefore, if something happens, the animal damages or harms, he doesn't have to pay. Another example is if the listim, the robbers came and opened up the pen, and out went the animals, so he's potter. The animal went out and caused harm, potter. Let's say the listim actually picked up the animal and took it out, and then it caused damage, they are responsible. Listim chayavim. So the Jewish robbers have to pay. Now let's say, he locked the door. He locked the barn, but it was very sunny, so he left the animal right in the middle of the sun. So he should have expected the animal to, when it gets to a certain point, that his animal is going to act out of desperation and somehow get out of that pen. He should have expected that. Or he handed his animal to an irresponsible fellow, a deaf mute, a deranged person, a katan who's not responsible, and went and caused damage. He's responsible. Why'd you give it to this person? But Masara L'Roya, he handed custody of his animal to the Roya, to a responsible shepherd, Nichnas Roya Tachtav, so the shepherd sort of steps into his shoes, he's now responsible. Now if a sheep is walking along the road, Nafla L'Ginan sort of slips and falls into a garden, a vegetable garden belonging to somebody else, Venenis, and he ate up some vegetables and he benefited from it. Basically, you saved a meal. Mishalemes Mashanenis. You don't have to pay actual damages, only what you actually benefited from it, because you're not chayiv in this case, because it was right near the Rishus HaRabim, and we learned this many times. You're not really chayiv for consuming stuff either in the street or right off the street, a place where he slipped off the street. That's considered like part of Rishus HaRabim with respect to the halacha. You don't pay actual damages, only the hanon. But Yardok Yidarka Vizika, let's say the animal specifically climbed down into your neighbor's vegetable patch and caused damage, that's called Shein B'chatzar Anizak, consuming inside the victim's territory, you pay actual damages. Now, even when we speak about actual damages, we don't mean literally, you know, banana for banana. Keitan Mishalemes Mashizika, how do you do that? How do you evaluate, how do you appraise this type of damage? So Rashi says, once again, we discussed this many times, if you would have to, you know, sort of evaluate that specific item that he damaged, let's say he ate up a patch of carrots. One patch of carrots is worth $1,000 if it's sold on its own, you know, retail value. But since we're speaking that it was part of a, you know, a big field, ultimately the value of this field is not really diminished by that much. Not really, you know, the loss isn't so severe, because a person wouldn't necessarily pay $1,000 less for the entire field in totality just because it's missing one patch. So rather than appraise that specific patch standalone, we sort of take the entire picture in its totality, and we deduct only in as much as this, you know, one less patch deducts from the overall price of that field. Okay, so let's see the Mishnah. Ketzad Mishlamas Mashiach Zika, how do you do that? Shaman base saw by saw. We take a base saw, which is, you know, a big area, and we say like this, Kama Hoysa Yafa V'Kama Yafa. How much was it worth? How much was it valued before this damage took place, before the, you know, carrot patch was destroyed? V'Kama Yafa, and how much is it worth now? So that difference, which is, you know, quite small, relatively small amount, that's how much you pay. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, well, that only works if the patch was not filled with, you know, ready to pick vegetables. So it sort of relates to the field, and you give this sort of comprehensive appraisal. But achla peros gemurim, mishalemes peros gemurim. Let's say these carrots were fully, you know, ready to be picked, so it no longer relates to the field. You have to look at it as an independent entity, and you pay exactly what you ate. Imsa, if you ate a saw, you pay a saw. Imsa saim, if you ate two saw, saw saim, you pay two. So Mishnah speaks about guarding your animal karoi properly. What does that mean? Ezo karoi ve'ezo shaloi karoi. What's called proper? What's called improper? Well, delas sheyichodo lamad bruch mitzuyah. If you put a, you know, closed it with a door that can withstand a ordinary, standard, typical gust of wind, zo karoi, that's called adequate security. Sheino yichodo lamad bruch mitzuyah. If it cannot withstand your typical wind, zo shalom karoi, that's called inadequate security. So bottom line, shmira pechusa, you know, basic shmira is sufficient, but you don't need shmira meula, the higher level of shmira, you know, perfect shmira. Omar mani bar patish mantana muad the sagile b'shmira pechusa. Who's this author? Who's this shita? Who's the tana of the Mishnah that holds that even a muad? Why are we calling it a muad? Because as we explained, we're speaking about damaging through Shein V'Regel, which are totally moored from day one. It's not like, you know, Karen, which has to sort of build itself up. It starts at the top, it's a relatively innocent type of thing, and then it sort of builds up, becomes habitualized and regular. Sain, using the Shein V'Regel, that's a moored from day one. He's liable from day one, 100%. So who says, who tells us that for a moored, even a Shmir Pechus is sufficient? That must be Rabbi Yudahi. We had this Mishnah way back. Let's say the owner of the animal tied it up with its, you know, reins, with its muzzle, v'nal afal of karoy and locked up properly. V'yotzav yizik, went out and caused damage. So that's shmira pechusa, basic shmira. Echad tam v'echad mod chayev. Divrei Rav Meir, according to Rav Meir, shmira pechusa is never enough. You need to do a real high level guarding to be absolved from the tam and the mu'ud damaging. So the Mishnah Bayas, which allows Shmira Pachusa, is evidently not Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no. Tam chayav. By a tam, you need a higher level of Shmira, but by a mu'ud, where everybody already knows it's a wild animal to keep away, pater there, even a Shmira Pachusa is sufficient. Shenema, we have a pasuk, by the mu'ud. Right, you have to pay for its damages. Why? Because you neglected to watch at all. You never watched anything. Evidently, if he did apply any sort of shmira, you're potter v'shamar huzeh. If he did a shmira pachus, it's considered shmamar, you're good. So, our Mishnah, which tells us that a shmira pachus suffices for a muad, must be Rabbi Yehuda speaking. Rabbi Lezo Ima English Shmira La Sakin, he takes it a step further. The only way to guard a mord is by doing a sakin, you shecht it with a knife, basically. There's no way to guard it. Okay, so our mission is revealed. Well, says the Gemara, no, doesn't have to be. Afilu Tim Rab Meir. Perhaps our Mishnah can be followed Rab Meir as well. So why are we letting you get away with the Shmira Pachusa? Well, Shani Shein Veregel, that Torah mi ata b'shmirosin. Remember, our Mishnah is speaking about damaging, not by way of goring, by attacking with a horn, something typical to a shoyer. We're speaking about a tzoyin, doing shein v'regel. And we find that the Torah minimized, lowered the standards with respect to your shmira obligations regarding shein v'regel. How do we know this? And even Rameir agrees. The Amar Belezer, v'amrigo samsei masnisa tonu, we added in the Braisa, arbo dvarim, with respect to the following four damages, HaTorah me'ata b'shmiros, and the Torah lowered the standards and required only basic shmirah. What are these four things? Ve'eluhein, boir, right? You dig a pit. You don't have to, you know, stuff up the pit. You don't have to refill it. You have to just cover it. That's relatively minor shmirah. And once you do that, you're good. Ve'esh, right? What are your responsibilities regarding your fire? As long as you did some sort of shmirah, it's enough. V'shein v'regel, these two as well. How do we know? We have a raya for each one. Bar l'chsev kiftach ish bar, o kiichre ish bar, v'lo yichasenu. Person opens or digs a bar, he's chayev because he didn't cover it. Haki so potter. Evidently, if he covered it, it's potter, even though he didn't plug it back up again. So it's relatively, you know, shmira pachusa. So you're potter. Evidently, that's enough. Regarding an ish, t'chsev shalim yishalim hamaver sabera. You're only chayev if you're actually light the fire, you go and you burn. Ad the oved kein mavri, only chai if you actually go and you burn it down. But if you did some sort of guarding and shmira, you're good. Likewise, when it comes to shein, dechsev ubir b'sdei acher. Ad the oved kein ubir. The Torah, in describing your animal being mazik through shein, uses the word ubir, indicating that the owner sort of actively did it. He did it, but if he withheld, if he secured it somewhat, you're okay. Same thing with regal, with trampling. He sent his animal. It was an outright act of damage. He actually damaged. But if he did some sort of shmira, even shmira pechusa absolves him. Now, how do we know these psukim must speak about shein v'regel? It only says ubir, it doesn't say shein. It says v'shilach, it doesn't say regal. So we have those other psukim, which we had back on the Beis on the Beis, if you remember. Ubir, V'tani of a brayso, v'shilach seher regel. V'shilach means regel. V'chinu oimer m'shalche regel shal v'chamar. So we find shiluach alluding to trampling, to regel. Ubir, that's referring to eating. Ze'ashen v'chinu oimer kashivar hagol atumoy. So gol is the tooth of the animal, which is sometimes open, sometimes closed, sometimes covered, uncovered. So yivar is alluding to consuming by teeth, by, you know, shein. So it's an act of eating. And bottom line, these psukim are referring to shein v'regel. And we learn from here that even basic watching, basic guarding is enough. Why? Time with the Ovid Kein Vishilach Ubir. He's only chayiv. He's only liable if he did Vishilach. Outright Vishilach Ubir. Outright Ubir. Meaning he's totally negligent and totally careless. But if he did something to, you know, protect, something to secure, something to prevent, Holy Ovid, but otherwise he didn't do that. He did Shmira Pechus Elo. He's not chayiv. I could even prove, you know, from the wording in our Mishnah itself that we're speaking about the hezek of shein v'regel and not keren, and that explains why shmir pachus is enough even according to Rav Meir. By the way, the Mefarshim explained You know why? Rameir says when it comes to Keren, you have to do Shmira, Mu'ula. You see, because there, the animal is going to habitualize itself. It's going to do over. It's going to habit, get more and more dangerous. And certainly if he's already a Mu'ud, he's a dangerous animal, Shmira, Mu'ula, but nothing less works. Whereas when it comes to Shane, you know, Shane Varegel, you know, he's a Mu'ud from day one. Basically, this is his part of his nature. He walks around, he eats. So it isn't, you know, such a outright expression of aggression, of hezek, and there, you know, sort of you can contain it, you can try to contain it, even with a basic shmira. So once again, Rabbah will prove this from our Mishnah that was speaking about Shein Beregel, Masin Namadeka, the Ktonei Tzoyim. Why does the Mishnah sort of switch to Tzoyim? Michtik, let's take a close look at these words. Bishar ka skin and vasi. Until now, we had five prakim discussing primarily a shur, an ox, a bull, causing damage. And suddenly we switch to a light animal. Why do we switch to tzayin, to sheep, and to goats? Right? That's because we're trying to highlight this point, that the Torah lowered the standards, required less shmirah in this case. Why? The reason is because over here by tzayin, there's no mention of keren in the Torah. That's not their forte. Right? L'ksiva, shev regul l'ksiva bei. The Torah relates to the tzoyin as one who's going to damage through shame to regal. So apparently that's the switch. That's the reason for the shift. We're switching to a different type, different mode of harm, of damage. V'kamash malon. My point of mission is the shame to regal, the mu'odin hu, that we specifically pick shame to regal who are mu'od from day one. So it's a different type of creature, different type of behavior. And shema minah, right from here, that in fact that's the difference. That makes the shift. That even according to Rav Meir, when it comes to Shein Beregel, the Torah was memait in the Shmira, and even Shmira Pachus is not. Okay, let's recap today's daf. And Amar Alf, we spoke about the word Toiv mentioned in Dibris Achroinus, because those were going to be eternal, uninterrupted, and we want Toiva to be present by Klal Yisrael forever. A person sees a test in his cholam, it's a good sign. Hesped means that they're looking after him and that Rachmanis on him. We learned that Kalaim applies to all types of creatures, Behemos, Chayis, Oifais, and even Dagim. We have the Mishnah. Shmira Pechusa suffices by the Tzoyin, who are going to go out and do Shein Beregel. And we concluded that it worked even according to Rav Meir, because when it comes to Shein Beregel, Shmira Pechusa is enough. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabbah.